Molly and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
Great to be 2-0. It's important that you're 2-0. Yet, they're 2-0 with a lot to be worried about. The headline on David's story today, Bears are an undefeated team, but not yet a good one. And I think that's accurate. I think, David, that they are still trying to find whatever it is their identity is. Now, again, we're expecting a finished product in a weird offseason where they had no chance of putting together the kind of preparation that you need. Certainly defense behind offense at this point, I think all over the NFL. But nonetheless, it's just not good enough yet. It really isn't.
There are two ways to look at the first two games of the Bears season. It's difficult to win in the NFL. It just feels like there's some empty calories there. They're not victories that have much substance when you beat the Lions and you beat the Giants. And I'm just trying to be honest, Molly, and I know you are too. It's like I felt a little bit more discouraged watching the Bears win yesterday than I did after week one, because in week one over the Lions, it was a road game. It was an opener. They showed some resilience in coming back. And yesterday, I just felt like they held on.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is another glorious day in the fine city of Chicago. Tuesday, September 22nd, and of course, we're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Good morning, David. How are you?
Morning, Molly. Happy Tuesday, first day of fall. Where did the summer go?
Is it actually the first day of fall? There is a great line from, I think it's F. Scott Fitzgerald, about how whenever the fall crispness is in the air, it means a new beginning. So there we are. Today.
Well, I don't think you're going to find many people in 2020 going to deny that idea or kind of fight against the thought of having a new beginning. So let's let a new beginning begin.
I'm glad it gets your seal of approval.
Thank you.
What'd you think of John Lester last night? John Lester, 6 scoreless innings. Cubs shut out the Pirates. 5-0. The Bats are back. Everything, the world is better when you're playing the Pirates, my friend.
Certainly helps to play the Pirates. John Lester, I think, has responded the last couple starts out, and he's a guy that kind of senses, he looks at the calendar too, maybe not because it's the first day of fall, but because he knows October is right around the corner, and that is his time traditionally when he is able to step up, and he doesn't want to be left out, and he can read the room pretty well, and he knows that Alec Mills took a step forward. It was time for him to do that too. Last night, Pirates are not. He has looked bad against bad teams, and last night he was more crisp. So that's a good development for the Cubs, and it was a good win because they needed a bounce back and they needed something to happen because that offense was pretty dreadful against the Minnesota Twins.
Kyle Schwarber had a couple hits, had a couple RBI, had a couple beautiful moments with the manager where he ran over and kind of hugged him and pushed him, and then he came back, and then he came back over again, and the head made a joke and grabbed him by the neck, and it was beautiful.
I love you, man. I mean, yeah, that was one of those moments. And you know what? Let's say this about Kyle Schwarber. I think that whole thing maybe was a little overblown on Sunday night. I felt like we said yesterday, or I said yesterday, it seemed a little like an overreaction. But I'll say this. Kyle Schwarber responded in the way that you want professional athletes to respond to being called out and being held accountable. And every athlete can learn from that. I love the way he answered that and the way that he, you know, didn't go to the clubhouse. He didn't pout. And then his first time back, 2 doubles last night. Good night for Schwarbs.
Chris Bryant left the game early with right oblique tightness. He swung the bat and it looked like his shoulder. I mean, he came out of the swing with like a bad wing, if that makes any sense. And then he took a pitch and they were like, oh, that did not look good. Let's get him out of there. So he ends up leaving the game. And again, there's less than a week left in the season. It's always worrisome when things like that happen.
You start to wonder what you're going to get from Chris Bryant in the postseason, if anything at all. Here we are, and it's September 22nd, and Chris Bryant's hitting 195, and there are no signs that he's going to be able to contribute in the final week. And this will do nothing to kind of dispel some of the notion that he, is pretty fragile this season. This is not his year. And last night, you talk about an oblique, and there's really no way to know how bad it is and how quickly he could come back.
Not great news for your Chicago White Sox. They kind of had their issues, if you will. Well, let's finish the Cubs first. Jose Quintana is going to make his first start for the Cubs tonight against the Pirates. Again, we're looking at the final week of the season. We're looking at moving people in position. But it's nonetheless a delight to see Jose Quintana back. And here's hoping Q can get it done tonight.
Yeah, it's a big surprise. I didn't see that one coming. But now I'm kind of excited. The fact he could start against the White Sox this week, that could be kind of fun.
Well, the White Sox probably need some starters of their own. If he could start for the White Sox, it might be an even better story. Dane Dunning, oh boy, he ran afoul of issues for the first time since we've seen him. And the White Sox came back and tied the game, so he's not charged with a loss, but they lost the game 7-4. They were down 4-0. They were down 3-0 early, and it was 4-0. They came back. They tied that game, and immediately Jace Fry gives up a two-run homer to Carlos Santana, and there's a black magic woman. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm really struggling here whether or not to kind of I'm kind of leaning toward denial when it comes to the White Sox right now, because they've had a couple of days in a row where you don't really want to look at the starting pitching woes. You really don't want to focus on Luis Robert in a slump, and you really don't want to look at some of the flaws that have surfaced the last couple days.
Yeah, we're not really going to get much into that.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling that, Foxy. I would rather just kind of be happily looking at the standings and seeing that, hey, isn't this a lot of fun? But real issues have emerged. I start to wonder about the back of that rotation heading into the postseason.
You want some good news for the White Sox?
Please.
There will be no Shane Bieber tonight. According to the Sox and Indians website, it's Cal Quantrill who will be the starting pitcher against Ronaldo Lopez. So I think Bieber is a problem for everyone. Although I saw the White Sox hit a couple homers against him earlier in the year. I think they scored 3 runs against him in that game. Ended up losing it. The bullpen blew it. But that would be welcome news.
Yeah, Wednesday, Giolito Bieber, really great pitching matchup. So
that'd be good.
Bumped a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, I'm just saying, Ronaldo Lopez.
If you have to face Shane Bieber, you'd like to have Lucas Giolito there.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. And that's good news. That is good news. And
on one hand, that's true. On the other, boy, if you are in concession mode and you feel like you want to win the game that Giolito pitches, yeah. But I guess pushing Bieber back is never – a night without Bieber is never a bad thing.
A night without Bieber. I like it. The Sox remain a game and a half ahead of the Twins, who were idle yesterday. I love that idea. They're just idle. The layabout Twins refuse to play again. Yeah. They couldn't be bothered going out and playing a game, according to the schedule makers. And they are 4 up on Cleveland. Let's hope they get this together. I hate to say this because I'm putting the Malecki on it, but if they can sweep these last 3 games, not only does that help in the division, but I believe that ties the season series, and psychologically there's something to be said for that. I can't believe I just said that because now it won't happen. But that's in the back of my mind. Dane Dunning struggled. 4 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs, a walk, 5 Ks, and allowed a homer. And again, the Sox did tie the game. Big 2-run bomb from Malloy, a big double from or big single rather with 2 on from RBI man, 2 RBI from Abreu, but wasn't enough, and they end up losing that game.
I tried to cheer you up a little bit because that game was, kind of hard to watch. They came back and then they gave it up again.
Immediately.
But did you see the Trevor Bauer YouTube address, or I guess he put on his channel the Tim Anderson home run, and he talked about – it was great. It was like 10 minutes long, and he broke down the at-bat that Tim Anderson homered off him. I would recommend it to anybody that's a subscriber or that saw it online. And Trevor Bauer has a great sense of humor, and he began it by showing all the times that he dominated Tim Anderson when he was with the Indians and the feeble swings. And then he gave him his credit. And I tell you what, it was really very fascinating to see how he would approach him as at bats, and he gave him credit, and it was really worth watching if you get a chance.
Oh, definitely. That's fun stuff. Matt Nagy says nothing significant in terms of any injuries from Sunday's game against the Giants. And we'll get to the rest of it, but there were 40-something injuries around the NFL, 40 guys that left games and didn't return. So that doesn't include David Montgomery and some of the guys you saw that kind of went out of that game. But one of the things that came out is a series of complaints about what's going on in New York, that stadium, the Jets. There were really multiple injuries, I think 5 serious injuries for San Francisco, including losing people for the season, losing pass rushers and Nick Bosa and just Solomon Thomas. It's horrible to see that 7 different players going down with ACL injuries in that day alone. And of course we saw one at Soldier Field with Saquon Barkley, but David, I wonder, after the fact, when you think about everyone complaining about the turf and all that stuff, how many guys did you see slipping on the Soldier Field turf?
A few.
I'm not,
yeah.
I saw a lot.
That went through my mind on Sunday, yeah. More than a few, maybe. And you did start to wonder. The 49ers complained about MetLife Stadium, all sorts of these things go up when you see the number of injuries, because these are guys' livelihoods we're talking about here. And I think they've even mentioned it on the broadcast a couple times, Charles Davis and Ian Eagle, about how slippery Soldier Field appeared to be. And did it seem to be one spot in the north end, or was it all over? Because I know there was one spot in the north end where you saw 2 guys really lose their footing bad.
Yeah, there definitely was that. But I don't know. I mean, if you're going to go take a look at MetLife and you're going to do more research and defend it, of course we wouldn't allow it. Stadium problems, yeah. Anybody ever see the Vet back in the day? If you're going to make that sort of an announcement, throw Soldier Field on the list, right? Let's do a whole, hey, what are you guys doing this week, NFL? Why don't you travel around the country and take a look at all the stadiums, including the new one in Vegas, which looked spectacular.
Spectacular. Didn't that look spectacular? What a night in Vegas.
Absolutely, yeah. Spectacular. Yep.
But you're exactly right. I mean, the NFL, if this is indeed contributing to what seems to be an unprecedented amount of injuries in week 2, boy, you know, you want them to be as thorough as possible. And that includes Chicago.
And the Raiders, we should mention, not only opening up the new stadium, but winning 34-24 over the Saints. Wow. And you know what that means, right? Mm-hmm. Means the Saints are another team chasing the Bears, my friend. That's what it means.
Okay, that's what I took out of that one. Let me say this. Last night was a lot of fun with the remote control. I was going between 4 events, the Cubs and the Sox, the Monday Night Football. And I did participate in watching the Stanley Cup Final Game, too. I know you're proud of me and happy for me. But look, that ESPN broadcast, I felt like Brian Griese and Louis Riddick are terrific to me. I love their insight. I love their opinions. And I only wish I could have heard more of them. That crowd noise was ridiculous. Why was it up so loud? Why did ESPN have the crowd noise so loud, drowning out the voices of these guys?
These are part of the questions we're left with watching professional sports.
No, these
I'm
are unprecedented
kidding.
Times, David.
These unprecedented times lead
to strike
unprecedented
you?
Errors. David, I still haven't recovered from the Fox broadcast with the White Sox looking at that miracle crowd that turns up and disappears. That is the most distracting thing ever. And you're right about the crowd noise. It was jacked up crazy level, and it did sort of bleed into the broadcast. I don't understand. I mean, I would hope that they've done some kind of research and what triggers the human mind. There's got to be a reason, right? They've got to be doing something. You would hate to think that this wasn't, you know, some a Freudian examination into what an ice cube looks like and how you can sell a product. I don't know what else it is, but it's the whole thing that we're seeing it just makes you question reality.
I just muted it last night for a stretch because it just like the crowd noise was too annoying. And those guys, their voices, now I'm not saying anything about the voices, but they tend to blend in. They were getting drowned out. So I just felt like I'm going closed caption here. And I did. I went closed caption for like a quarter. I'm reading rather than listening. And I'm like, okay, good point that I just read. I enjoyed that game, though.
Yeah, it was fun. I probably stayed up too late watching it, to be honest with you. I had a hard time breaking away from it after they came out and scored in the second half. I mean, it was just fun. It was just a fun game. And again, another team chasing the Bears. 312-644-6767 is the number. We got the pick six next. We got a big show planned for you as always. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Bears are unbeaten in two games after a fourth quarter comeback against Detroit and Sunday's outlasting of the New York Football Giants. Do you consider Sunday's game at winless Atlanta their biggest test to date? Why or why not?
Yeah, I do. I think this is their biggest test to date, even though it's a team that has lost. They've scored a ton of points, and that's the reason why. They've got two excellent receivers, and that's the reason why. They suffered some injuries in their game. They had three starters go down. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the right tackle misses this game, which is huge. So you're getting a swing tackle as one of the guys defending your pass rush. Listen, you know, they can throw the ball down the field. They've got some really nice receivers. It's going to be a challenge. They're going to test a rookie cornerback. That's what you do. Now, he looks like he's up for the challenge, but what happens with rookie corners is uneven performance usually. So I think that is one of the big matchups in this game. And I think this game, as much as we are kind of focused on the quarterback and all the rest of it, there is a balanced attack here. You know, they have struggled on defense. Dan Quinn is on the hot seat, maybe one of three coaches that seems like he's in major trouble. So this is a kind of circle the horses game, if I can quote Alonzo Spellman. Let's put the valuable animals out there to protect us instead of the wagons. But whatever. This is a really important game for them. I think they're fairly desperate, and I think this is a good spot for the Bears, given the pass rush should be good just based on injuries to opponent. And they get rid of the ball, though, and they can strike downfield and they score points. So this is a real test for the defense.
No questions to step up in class for the Bears. I mean, Matt Ryan excels at the quick passing game. He's got more first down passing than any quarterback in football right now with 38, and he's a guy with this offense. They are really dangerous when you look at their receiving core and Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. That is a tandem that is better than the Bears have faced, and you know, one of the best tandems that they will face in the entire season. The good news for the Bears is that they're playing defense that has been a sieve. There's only one defense that has been worse through 2 weeks in the NFL, and the Falcons have given up 476 yards per game and 39 points. That spells opportunity. So you've got to take care of the football. You can't get into a turnover kind of fest the way that the Cowboys did early on. They turned the ball over, I think, four times. But definitely the Falcons are desperate. If Dan Quinn goes to 0-3, based on the way they lost to the Cowboys with the onside kick and players not really knowing what to do in that situation, they look like they were not well coached. If Dan Quinn goes to 0-3, he could be one of the first coaches fired. I'm not sure if it would be Monday or sooner rather than later, but he would be in trouble. And so that is a desperate football team, but it's also a very, very talented one.
Pick six!
How is Mitchell Trubisky playing through two games? Is he going to retain his starting job longer than people projected, and for how long?
Well, I'm not sure where this is coming from, but I wonder if it's a product of Pro Football Focus. you know, giving Mitch Trubisky pretty good grade through 2 weeks, or Mike Florio, who we'll talk to at 8:40, but he was very impressed by Mitch's interviews. But there seems to be this consensus building that Mitch Trubisky has improved, and that improvement makes the Bears a playoff team, I think is the headline on PFF.com. Okay, yeah, I'm probably not in that group that agrees with that. I look at four good quarters, and I look at four lousy quarters, and I wonder which quarterback is really going to step forward in week three. And I think when you're wondering which quarterback is going to emerge from the Mitch Trubisky that we have come, the inconsistency that we have come to expect from him, I'm not sure that's much different in 2020. And I'm not trying to be unfair, and I'm not trying to be somebody who is digging in because I expected Nick Foles to be the quarterback by now. I think that objectively speaking, this is a guy that still has been very careful, and he's been maybe slightly better at times, but he's been slightly familiar at times. So I don't know that he's playing. You know, when Matt Nagy described his team as okay, I think Mitch has been okay through two games, but I don't think he's been above average, but I don't think he's been below average overall. But I don't know that he's going to make you feel very good about the position right now.
Thought Mitch would be replaced at halftime of the first game. I mean, I'm not joking a little bit, but that's where the conversation started. Like, oh, mother of God, can we go through this again? No. And the fourth quarter kind of saved him moving forward. And then he put together a pretty decent game, a good first half last week, and they held on and they won that game. So after the first half of the first game, I really thought they'd made an error and that Mitch would not last the first quarter of the season. Now I think he lasts the first quarter of the season. And I think that that's kind of the way you got to break it down in his situation. He's played well enough. That's fine. They've done well enough. They're 2-0. I don't think that he's rewriting the history books. I don't think that we're going to view him significantly differently than we did to start the season. But they have figured out a way to win with Mitch Trubisky and the defense not playing as well as we project it will. So they're using the running game well. They've changed some of their play calling. Mitch has delivered to a certain extent, and I think that they will be able to sort of keep through placid water until they get into bad trouble, and then that'll be over pretty quickly. So it again, you keep earning the right to start as you win games. I think if he missteps in Atlanta, I think that then there'll be a conversation, but he retains the job. So it's the only distance I'm looking right now is first quarter of the season, and I think he makes it through the first quarter of the season. And frankly, we'll see as we move forward here how they do. But it's all about just winning. All you got to do is win to keep that job, Mitch.
Pick six! Wow!
Where are you at with the White Sox rotation after Dane Dunning's outing? Who is your third starter, or do you need more information before making that decision? And is Reynaldo Lopez in the mix, depending on the outcome of his start tonight?
Yeah, I feel like I'm some guy at a table, and I've got names, and I've laid everything out, and you know, it's like I'm trying to make sure that at the big banquet, at the wedding dinner, everybody is going to have fun at these little tables, and all these names are going to line up correctly, and nobody is going to we're going to find out about some secret issue between people. And no, he can't sit near him. Oh, for God's sake, don't you remember what happened with Aunt Janice? So at this point, after last night, as I was seriously investigating everything and moving all these names around, I just threw them all up in the air. And now I got to start finding them again and reconsidering where everyone sits. It was not good last night. You know, I think that Dylan Cease, as we've talked about before, has better stuff than Dane Dunning. But I think Dane Dunning has been able to do more with his stuff. Now people are scouting you a little bit. Yeah, I think it all is going to come down to who's coming back and who isn't. And by that, I'm just talking about the bullpen stuff. There were some people that let you down in the bullpen last night again. And I think that you got to consider everything when you start talking about who's starting games and how long you're going with them. But at this point, I need more information, and I'm not making a decision until we have to have the seating chart done.
Where am I at after Dane Dunning started? I'm in the spare bedroom going through the drawers looking for my rosary. That's where I'm at, because prayer can't hurt. Look, Dane Dunning, I'm going to go with Steve Stone's analysis on this one, because I think Stoney has been reading this team right all season long. I think he did show some signs of maybe not responding well to maybe throwing more than 100 pitches the last time out. Maybe this is one of the things you deal with a young pitcher. Unfortunately, I think the White Sox, when the playoffs arrive next week, the white playoffs are here, wow. Bully, next week, oh, that my. You've got to just kind of feel who is coming off the best start. Maybe it's you're riding momentum. I like the idea still of Dylan Cease being probably behind Dane Dunning, and Dane Dunning getting the nod because of the control and because you can't tolerate walks when you're in the postseason. And I still trust Dane Dunning to get the ball across the plate more consistently than Dylan Cease in those moments when he would be amped up. And I don't factor in Reynaldo Lopez regardless of what happens tonight.
Can you believe this? Pick six!
What are reasonable expectations for Jose Quintana in his surprise start today? And speaking of starting pitching, after John Lester's second straight solid start, how would you line up the Cubs rotation heading into the playoffs?
Let's start with Q. Did you think when he reported to spring training in Arizona back in February, he thought he'd be making his first start of the season on September 22nd? Goodness sakes. It has been a long ride for him to get to this point. I don't know what he offers in the postseason. I do think you want him around. I think that he could be an asset, but I don't know until we see what he has, what he's going to offer. So I think that is basically a lot of curiosity surrounding that start, but count on nothing and be thankful for anything you get. John Lester, to me, has regained the benefit of the doubt. And I think that when you look at the way that he has come through, maybe it is a start-by-start basis. Maybe he's got one more and he'll stink in that and you'll have some doubts again. But to me, what he's done in his last two starts is remind us that he is John Lester and he's not going to go down quietly. So, yeah, I think that he's back in play for that Game 3 starter.
I do too. I try to remind myself it's Pittsburgh and all the rest of it. But no, John Lester definitely is my Game 3 starter. It's the back of the baseball card. It's the history of the player. And he looks like he's doing okay and is getting it. As far as Quintana is concerned, I agree with you, David. We have no idea what to expect. If he does great, I'm going to remind myself it's the Pirates. If he doesn't, I'm going to remind myself he didn't get the kind of build up to what he was doing and hope that he can help out of the bullpen once the playoffs begin. But at this point, I got Lester there.
That is a pick six!
Do you credit the Cubs' offensive explosion a response to a slump or just a game against the Pirates? Chris Bryant left in the second inning with an apparent shoulder injury. Are they doomed without him, or is David Bodie an able replacement?
Well, I'm going to get out of your way on this one, David, because I know you want to talk Bodie. I would say that the offensive response was playing the Pirates a little bit. I wish I had seen some of that against some better pitching, but not good when Chris Bryant goes down and it's an oblique, it's not a shoulder. Doomed without him? Certainly not. David Bodie, an able replacement.
I'm not going to abandon Chris Bryant because I do think that he is still going to be a good player. This is one of those seasons for him, and the health issues continue to mount. But asking if David Bodie is a capable replacement for Chris Bryant, come on, guys. Can Chris Bryant capably replace David Bodie? David Bodie's numbers are better this year. He's got 6 homers, 27 runs batted in, a .315 OBP. Chris Bryant, 2 homers, 5 RBIs. Come on, what are they really missing?
This is Jamal Adams with a block and a pick six.
NFL team saw 40 players go down with various soft tissue injuries and not return in week 2 games, including a whopping 7 players lost to season-ending torn ACLs. What do you blame it on, and was it all no preseason?
You've got to think that. You've got to start there. You've got to ask those questions about the preseason. Is it all because of that? And then, Molly, I on the other hand, I look at it, some of these players who are going down are big-name players and stars who would not have played in the preseason anyway. But I don't think you can ignore the fact that there might be a 2-game preseason that continues to make sense, and you just can't ignore or neglect that. And it's impossible for me not to make some sort of connection there.
Yeah, and we had talked about this. There was a story out there about the last time you had this sort of a startup without a proper beginning, training camp, etc. That there were issues, and there were a ton of knee injuries that season. And my God, seven ACLs in one weekend is a disaster for the NFL. There's got to be some kind of connection. We're going to try to make one anyway. I get it that Barkley was never going to play. I don't think Nick Bosa played in any of these games, preseason games. But I think we're looking at injuries and we're trying to figure out no padded practices, no ramp up. And I think everyone's connecting dots, so you need some of that, no doubt about it. All right, we're going to get to Kevbo. We'll get you a scoreboard update. We're going to get to Big Z. It's Big's time next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Brad Biggs. Big's time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Big's time.
The Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Big's time.
Big Z.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you're what's going on, and we should let people know that this segment with Brad Biggs brought to you by Bet River Sportsbook, Chicago's hometown sportsbook. We've decided it's a step up in class. Is that accurate, Brad, given the winless nature of the Falcons season?
Yeah, the Falcons are going to be super desperate, and they can move the ball up and down the field and score. They seem to have gotten worse defensively during Dan Quinn's tenure, which he's been there a while. I believe he arrived in 2015 from Seattle with a reputation as a pretty sharp defensive guy. They don't play a whole lot of it. They look like they're destined for the Big 12 conference or something. The Big 12. They're not playing D, guys. So I don't know how to explain it, but yeah, I'd say it's a step up in class. The Bears have got to go on the road. They've got to defend Matt Ryan in a pretty potent passing game, but the Falcons can get away from the run at times. It's a big game because if the Bears can get to 3-0, boy, you start 3-0 and your chances, and you got a long road ahead of you, but your chances of making the playoffs are really good.
Brad, yesterday Matt Nagy was asked about the Eddie Jackson play, the 54-yard return that was called back, the pass interference call, and he walked a pretty fine line. Eddie Jackson didn't really leave any doubt where he stood. He went to social media and criticized the officiating. Will he hear about that, and do you think, in your opinion, was it a good call?
Well, Nagy was clearly hot on the sideline. When you watch the game, you could see that he was really fired up about that call. I thought the coach was fine with his remarks yesterday. He basically said they're going to call what they're going to call, and you got to live with it. In real time, I thought it was a great play by Eddie Jackson. When you see that slowed down, I mean, it's clear he knocks the intended receiver down or out of the way with his right shoulder before the ball gets there. I mean, that's the definition of pass interference, that if you contact the guy early, you're going to get a flag. Again, that's in slow motion. In real time, it looked like a hell of a play, maybe partially because of the angle that you saw it at. But when they slowed it down, the defender's there with contact before the ball. So some people say, well, he's got a right to go for the ball too. Absolutely, doesn't have the right to go through the receiver to get the ball.
This segment with Brad Biggs is presented by MailMedChicago.com, where a full head of hair is the winning play. And Biggsy, Matt Nagy talked about the unbelievable blocking of the tight ends. I mean, it was, I mean, listening to it, I felt weak-kneed. Oh, the tight ends are blocking. I often think about this idea that when you are deficient at a particular position in any sport, sometimes when you just get good enough to do what you're supposed to do, it looks like huge improvement. Now, I haven't broken down the All-22 and seen exactly what Matt Nagy is talking about, but I would imagine that any kind of blocking is better than no blocking, and sometimes you can confuse greatness with just kind of efficiency and getting your job done.
Yeah, I'll say a couple things about that. Number one, they've gone to 12 personnel and 13 personnel with two tight ends and three tight ends on the field, and that's significantly helped their running game for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is they've got those bigger guys out there participating in the run game. Now, he tried to sell Jimmy Graham as some, you know, really high-level blocking tight end, and my reaction to that is they didn't guarantee Jimmy Graham $9 million to go out there and block in the running game. They're going to need more from those guys. You know, the folks who were selling how this was a position of strength and everything they were going to do in the passing game have kind of missed the mark here through the first couple weeks. The tight ends had two catches combined for 30 yards against the Giants. They're going to get more from that group, but I think for them to be able to mix it up, to be able to go three wide and do some stuff, to be able to then go up to as many as three tight ends or two tight ends on the line and put one of them in the backfield. I mean, there's a lot of different things Nagy can do, and being able to diversify things has certainly helped a running game, which I thought did a really nice job against the Giants. When you talk about 135 yards, more than 4 yards a clip, and Montgomery really had some nice runs in there. And the tight ends, they play a part in that. They're not the main reason it's happening.
You know, Brad, after two games, the Bears are averaging 30 runs per game, and they're ninth in the NFL with 142 rushing yards on average per game. Number one, you know, there are a lot of false positives in the first couple of weeks, but that to me is something that they can point to as a sign of progress. Do you think that is sustainable, and do you think that's the right formula with this defense, which might not be as good as maybe we thought it could be?
I think it's the right formula with the quarterback right now, that the quarterback has shown that he can have some success playing under center with some of the play action, the bootlegs, the nakeds, those different wrinkles that they have that they're trying to emphasize in the playbook this season. And so you can kind of marry some of those pass plays with some run plays and make things look similar and create some clear throwing windows for Mitch Trubisky. So I think that's a match for him right now. If the offensive line can...
I think we dropped Brad. If the offensive line can continue to block the way they have is where he was going. I've got to tell you, I think it makes such a difference when you know that you're going to be running a certain percentage of plays, when you're not just in this sort of retreat mode, whether that is something that you've got to be able to incorporate and be good at no matter what. There's nothing like an offensive line that's heading downhill and has that confidence kind of built in that they're going to be initiating the contact instead of trying to absorb it. It changes the mentality of the group.
And it changes the way that they function. And you watch the Bears offense, and maybe it's just because they are running the ball more effectively, but they're committing to it, and they're not seeing as many examples of them catching pass rushers. It seems like last year they were like catching people off the line of scrimmage, and now they seem to be firing out. And whether it's Juan Castillo's coaching or whether it's just a point of emphasis by Matt Nagy. It has worked through 2 weeks, maybe a product of the opponent, but that the numbers don't lie, and that shows a commitment in 30 rushes per game and also the execution when you're looking at a top 10 rushing team.
And part of that is that that's kind of the beauty of the tight end stuff, because you're in 12 and 13 personnel, because you're tight end dominant. And look, you know, I think both of the guys that they're using most often are guys that can catch the football. I know you have already begun molding the bust for Cole Kmet, and you referenced that, I believe, on Sunday.
Do me a favor. Don't use bust and Cole Kmet in the same sentence anymore.
Hall of Fame bust.
Okay. You tweeted that out the other day, and I did not want to scold you online, but I just scolded you on the air. Don't use bust and Cole Kmet in the same sentence.
Well, you immediately hit me up, but this is one of many, many catches. Like you
first
were just
of many,
having,
many.
You,
the first
yeah,
of
you
so
were having
many.
Fun with it, so I just said, hey, start molding the bust. I didn't mean that he was
a glorious
going to be
catch.
One.
But your point is well taken. You're right. I mean, look, this Bears offense is going to evolve, and we're going to study every week. But I like the direction of all the things that I've seen in 2 weeks. That, to me, is the most encouraging sign of growth in this group, is that they are running the football effectively enough to set up everything else. And I agree with Brad. It's a product probably mostly of the quarterback, and that formula does work because you want to use his skill set properly, and running the football makes that more possible.
And you know, let's be honest, David, that has made him a better quarterback. I mean, he's playing better for that very reason, right? He's getting help in places where he needs it.
We've criticized Matt Nagy for not understanding how to get the most out of the skills of Mitch Trubisky, or to understand, you know, not trying to force his scheme onto a guy whose skills might not, you know, accentuate it. And this season, through two games, it seems like he's gotten that message, or at least he's learned from watching, you know, last year's tape over and over and over again.
All right, we've got John Heyman. We're going to bring him in and find out what the national story is with our two baseball teams. Are we getting out ahead of ourselves? I'm spending time breaking down the playoff roster, which is 26 active players, one more than last year, and of course, 13 of them, only 13 can be pitchers, and I'm sitting here trying to get all the math correct, and am I wasting my time? We'll ask John next. Mully and Haw on the score.